This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It's really now or never. The police have deteriorated so badly over the last 8 to 10 years.
That was Gart Newham, crime analyst at South Africa's Institute for Security Studies, on how South Africa's unrest has presented President Cyril Ramaphosa with a great opportunity to overhaul the police. Details coming up. Also, U.S. Agency for International Development head Samantha Power is set to meet today with officials in Ethiopia to discuss matters related to the country's Tigray region. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Tunisia remains in limbo more than a week after President Kais Saied fired the prime minister, froze parliament, and expanded his executive powers. Saied has denied claims that he mounted a coup d'etat, saying his sweeping moves adhere strictly to the constitution. Local polls have shown overwhelming support for Saied's actions, but the waiting game is leaving some citizens and allies concerned about what comes next as pressure for decisions mounts. Professor Safwan Masri, Executive Vice President of Columbia University's Global Centers, discussed the situation in Tunisia with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
I think there is overwhelming support in Tunisia for the move by Saied. There is a minority of pro-democracy elites within the country who are opposing the move, but are too careful not to express their opposition. We know that two members of parliament, one of them an independent, Yassine Ayari, who was taken into custody because he was critical of the move. So I think people are very careful. The lack of action by Kais Saied is not that surprising. I think of him as a naive populist. I don't think he has any idea of how to govern. He is feeding on the people's justifiable frustration that 10 years and 9 governments later, Tunisia's economic have yet to be addressed. And I think the fact that there is massive corruption also, you know, which adds to the horrible situation of the economy. And when people can't find food on the table and can't find a job, you know, it's not surprising at all when they welcome a more authoritarian rule, which promises delivery on economic aspirations. Now, is there concern that he has not yet acted? Yeah, definitely. He has really not done very much over the past 10 days. He has not appointed a new prime minister. He has not declared how he is going to deal with the economic issues. All he has done is really call on the private sector to reduce prices. He's called on banks to cut interest rates, but he has not really discussed how these moves would be financed, how these measures could be realistic.
Middle Eastern, European allies, and the United States now worry about the future of Tunisia. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan spoke with the Tunisian leader, and the call focused on the critical need for Tunisian leaders to outline a swift return to Tunisia's democratic path. Would the U.S. pressure secure a continued path to democracy in Tunisia against regional pressure to exclude Islamists from the political scene?
We all know that newly formed democracies need substantial help from other stronger, entrenched democratic countries in order to survive and thrive. Whatever form of help that the United States offered to the only surviving democracy of the Arab Spring was not enough. We hailed Tunisia's democratization, but we failed to give it the attention and support that it needed. And we have in the West the history of propping up dictators and of acting when we do too late. In Egypt, don't forget that the U.S. administration under Obama described Hosni Mubarak as a strategic ally a week before he fell. So far, we have heard common rhetoric coming out of the White House and the State Department. I think there's a lot more that the U.S. can do. It can suspend aid to Tunisia. The United States needs to understand that Tunisia needs it much more than the U.S. needs Tunisia. And there is leverage that can be applied. On the other hand, I'm not sure that Saied really cares about what comes or doesn't come from the West. I think that he is aligned and backed by countries that are working to exclude Islamists from the political scene, namely Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. It is reductionist and superficial to conflate various forms of political Islam with one another, to conflate al-Nahda with the Muslim Brotherhood. Al-Nahda has a very different history, has had a very different recent history also within a democratic Tunisia. I also think that it is very naive for anyone to think about a representative, inclusive democracy not accommodating and coming to terms with political Islam. It's a mistake to think that political Islam cannot be part of another form of government. So you've got countries that are absolutely opposed to political Islam that form one axis in a proxy war in various parts of the region. The other axis is occupied, of course, by Qatar and Turkey. And my concern is that Tunisia is falling victim, allowing foreign intervention that is going to unravel its democratic institutions, that is going to make Tunisia into a client state, that its authoritarianism gets financed by countries that not only have a wish to destroy political Islam, but have a broader agenda of crushing democracy.
That was Professor Safwan Masri, Executive Vice President of Columbia University's Global Centers, speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shanawi. U.S. Agency for International Development head Samantha Power is set to meet today with officials in Ethiopia as the United States urges the government to allow unfettered access for humanitarian aid to the Tigray region. Power met Tuesday with refugees in Sudan who have fled Tigray, and she reiterated the position of the United States, the United Nations, and others that ultimately will help the people in the northmost region of Ethiopia to end the war that has been ongoing for more than 9 months. The United States announced last week $149 million in additional humanitarian assistance for the Tigray region, while also calling attention to bureaucratic delays and attacks on aid convoys that have hindered efforts to get food and other necessary supplies to those in need. The African Union Mission in Somalia, or AMISOM, says it has begun training Somali police officers to boost their skills in countering violent extremism. VOA's Ruben Chama reports from Nairobi.
AMISOM officials say the week-long training in the Somali capital, Mogadishu, will improve the ability of the Somali police force in countering violent extremism through enhanced collaboration and partnership with the community. Augustine Magnus Kailie is the AMISOM police commissioner.
The general aim of the refresher course in preventing and countering violent extremism through community policing is to equip the SPF participants with the requisite knowledge, skills, and attitude in community policing strategies in the fight against violent extremism.
Facilitated by AMISOM police component, the training has attracted 25 police officers. The AMISOM police chief says the transnational nature of violent extremism requires a multifaceted approach to tackle it. He underscored the need for law enforcement agencies to embrace community policing and build partnerships with communities to effectively counter criminal activities.
Violent extremism is a multifaceted global phenomenon. It knows no boundaries. Therefore, preventing and countering it equally requires a multidimensional approach. In this vein, the role of law enforcement agencies, for that matter, the police, cannot be overemphasized.
On her part, the Somali Police Force Deputy Police Commissioner Brigadier General Zakia Hussein Ahmed reiterated the importance of community policing, saying the concept is the answer to violent extremism, not only in Somalia, but the rest of the world.
Community policing is what the police forces of all the African countries are actually based upon. We have so many from the AMISOM offices that can also share their own country experiences. What are the obstacles that stand in your way? Communication is where all the problem resolutions always come from. Community policing is the answer to counterterrorism in this continent, and not only in this country, in the African continent in itself.
The participants are drawn from various ranks and personnel from the Criminal Investigation Unit, Training Unit, and Demining Unit. AMISOM is providing operational support to the Somali police force as the war-torn Horn of African nation continues to battle militant group Al-Shabaab, which has links to Al-Qaeda. The group has waged an insurgency in Somalia since 2006, launching deadly assaults on military bases, government offices, and civilian targets. In response, the United States has supported AMISOM forces in its peacekeeping mission. The U.S. has recently carried out airstrikes against the Islamist insurgents who are seeking to overthrow the Western-backed Somali government and establish an Islamic State. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, is leaving Cameroon's western region after a months-long government suspension. Cameroonian authorities accused the aid organization of collaborating with Anglophone separatists, a charge the group strongly denies. Aid workers say the departure of MSF, one of the few medical groups working in the troubled region, means thousands of people will go without access to emergency care. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Withdrawing emergency health care services amid a crisis is a difficult one, but it is a decision Doctors Without Borders, or Médecins Sans Frontières, had to make after the government suspended its operations for 8 months. Cameroonian authorities accused the aid group of helping separatist groups in the country's English-speaking northwest region. Laura Martinelli is MSF's coordinator for the northwest region, where thousands of people need access. She says MSF sees no signs of the Cameroon government authorizing the medical aid group to resume activities.
We simply cannot remain indefinitely on standby in an area where we are not authorized to do our job. But we still hope that authorities will revise this decision for the sake of the population, because thousands of patients benefited from our free emergency services. We are therefore maintaining a liaison office to continue the dialogue in the region and at central level.
Martinelli said MSF will be ready to resume its life-saving activities whenever Cameroonian authorities lift the suspension. She said the presence of MSF is vital, as the aid group was one of the few international medical organizations offering free care for people in need, providing free 24-hour ambulance services to civilians in the northwest region. Kennedy Tumenta is the coordinator of the Integrated Mental Health Care for Humanity in Babungo, a village in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest region. He says the center provides psychological care to civilians that MSF treats. Tumenta says MSF's departure means that thousands of civilians caught in crossfire would be left without much-needed help.
The withdrawal of Doctors Without Borders is a setback for the population who are highly in need, for organizations like us who provide mental health services to distressed individuals, especially in this region. As crisis has increased the challenges of accessing certain basic health services, we hope that the government and Doctors Without Borders will find ways to solve this problem.
Cameroon's Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanganji, who announced the suspension of MSF in December 2020, declined to comment on MSF's withdrawal when VOA reached out for an interview Tuesday. But in June, Cameroon's health ministry reported that nearly 30% of hospitals in the northwest region are no longer functioning due to separatist attacks, and hundreds of health workers have fled to French-speaking towns for safety. Cyril Etoga is a health analyst at the University of Yaoundé.
Il faut savoir faire la différence entre les activités d'une organisation.
He says Cameroon should know how to distinguish between the activities of a reputable international organization and groups that may be collaborating with separatists. He says Cameroon's government should legally charge people suspected of collaborating with separatists instead of suspending MSF. Etoga says Cameroon needs the assistance of organizations like MSF to meet the growing health needs of its citizens in conflict zones. In 2020, Cameroon's government accused Doctors Without Borders of having close relations with separatists who are fighting to create an independent English-speaking state. The aid organization, known by its French initials, MSF, strongly denies the accusations and says its only goal is to save lives. MSF says more than 1.4 million people in Cameroon's restive western regions need humanitarian support, where access to health care is extremely limited. Separatist crises that began in Cameroon's English-speaking regions in 2017 has killed more than 3,000 people and displaced 750,000 both internally and to neighboring Nigeria, according to the UN. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The Electoral Commission of Zambia has banned the main opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, alliance for campaigning in Kanyama constituency, its stronghold in the capital, Lusaka. This after two supporters of the ruling Patriotic Front, PF, were killed following clashes with UPND backers. So far, the police have arrested four suspects. Meanwhile, incumbent President Edgar Lungu has deployed the military in parts of Lusaka, including the Kanyama constituency, to prevent additional violence. But Thabo Kuana, spokesperson for the UPND alliance, says the deployment clearly shows that the president lacks confidence in the ability of the police to maintain peace during election season. Analysts say the political situation is tense in Lusaka and other parts of the country due to what they anticipate to be one of the most competitive presidential elections in the country's history. Zambians go to the polls on August 12th to choose a new president and parliament. Crime and security analysts say the recent outbreak of public violence in South Africa has exposed the police service as weak and poorly managed. 3 weeks ago, looters rampaged through several cities, stealing and destroying property following the imprisonment of former President Jacob Zuma for contempt of court. In many instances, the police did little to contain the rioting, forcing citizens to take the law into their own hands. Darren Taylor has more.
In one shocking case, a mob looted a mall in Soweto near Johannesburg, across the road from a police station. A small group of officers initially fired rubber bullets into the crowd, but soon gave up as they were hopelessly outnumbered. The criminals plundered the shopping center until it was empty. Similar scenes played out elsewhere in the city. In Durban, mobs looted and burned their way through the port's warehouse district for days, meeting little resistance from the police. Crime analyst at the Institute for Security Studies, Gareth Newham, says the South African Police Service is dysfunctional due to bad leadership.
Since 2009, there have been eight different people who held the post of National Commissioner. So every 1 or 2 years, a new person gets appointed. They restructure the top echelons. They're bringing people loyal to them, often not being properly assessed. They're there largely because of their perceived loyalty to act in the interests politically and personally of the president.
He says the country's policing crisis will continue as long as the service is filled with people whose priority is playing politics for the ruling African National Congress, or ANC, rather than law enforcement. That said, Newham says many of South Africa's 800 police generals and brigadiers are excellent.
The 200 generals, you probably do not need that many, but many of them are really highly experienced men and women of immense integrity, years of experience, probably could compete with the best police officers in the world.
But he says it's equally true that a lot of the top police officers don't deserve their positions.
The problem is that for political reasons, the ANC ministers over the last decade or so have been inclined to appoint people into those posts more for their political loyalties and less because of their abilities or capabilities.
Police Minister Bheki Cele says he has confidence in the appointments he's made and insists the recent violence would have been much worse had it not been for the actions of his brave officers. But Newham says a police force simply can't function properly if it's staffed with people who have little to zero actual experience in law enforcement.
And so you've got a situation of a top echelon of generals and brigadiers that do not see eye to eye, are not on the same page, do not trust each other, are not able to work together. And we've seen that dysfunction trickle down into the police. So that despite a 65% increase in the budgets between 2012 and 2020, most important indicators, such as the ability to solve murder, for example, has dropped by 38%. Air support, roadblocks, coordinate search operations have all dropped by double figures.
The analyst believes the unrest has presented President Cyril Ramaphosa with a great opportunity to overhaul the police.
I certainly hope he will. It's really now or never. The police have deteriorated so badly over the last 8 to 10 years that there's not much more that we can expect if we don't see really whole-scale reform and a complete clean-out of the dead wood at the top levels. And only the president can ensure that happens. So,
if this doesn't happen, says Newham, South Africa is soon going to be an even more dangerous, unstable place than it currently is. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Perut Chemutal of Uganda won the gold medal in the women's 3,000-meter steeplechase final at the Tokyo Olympics today, finishing the race at 9.145 and setting a new Uganda national record in the process. Courtney Ferrarich of the U.S. won the silver medal in 9.479, while Kenya's Haivin Kiyang took the bronze medal in 9.539. Ethiopia's Magdas Ababa finished fourth in 9.0616. Two other African women, Beatrice Chepkoech of Kenya, who's the current world record holder, and Ethiopia's Zerfe Wundemageng finished 7th and 8th. Meanwhile, Kenyan men dominated the 800-meter finals as Emmanuel Kipkorori won the gold in 1 minute 45.06 seconds, and he was closely followed by his compatriot Cheruiyot Rotik, who won the silver in 1.45.23 seconds. Poland's Patrick Bodek took the bronze in 1.45.39 seconds. Botswana's Nigel Amos finished the race in 8th place. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat and dumbolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05.